This is an interview with Governor Victor Attia at his office in downtown Portland, Oregon. The interviewer for the Oregon Historical Society is Clark Hansen. The date is June 21st, 1993, and this is tape 38, side one. So, the missing speech.
The fortunate part was that I had worked so long on that particular speech that, what I really wanted to say, I already knew. I may not have delivered it as well as I would like to or in the detail that the speech would have held, but the message was quite clear. And it isn't as if it was fresh. Somebody handed it to me. This one, I had worked on at great length. And when I realized I wasn't on the right speech, I continued on the vein of what the right speech was. I just didn't have it in front of me.
You couldn't give the speech that you had that was going to be given later?
Oh, no, it didn't fit at all. My message was that, look, I understand where we are. I know the attitude, and we can't have that. We've got a lot of work to do, and we've got I use the word drive to the tape. We're not going to let up. We're going to go right through. But that was the tenor of what the speech was all about. That was the message. That's why I gathered him. That's why I wanted to talk to him.
Maybe this is an appropriate moment. Were there any other near disasters or embarrassing moments in your administration that that you could remember?
People would ask that. It isn't generally known, but it will be now. When they talk about an embarrassing moment, what do you do? I think this goes way back. I think maybe to 1974. I was in La Grande, and I was at a breakfast meeting, and the tables were kind of set up in a U-shape in the side room of the restaurant. So it's not a large room. This is La Grande early in the morning. And maybe there were, 25, 30 people. But they were seated in this U-shape with me at the head of the U, it's where I was sitting. But people were sitting on both sides of the table, including right in front of me. So, and I stand up. This is not a podium speech. You just get talking to folks. And I did that and finished, and then anybody have any questions? Well, my good friend Merle Smith, Smitty, he flew me around, quite a guy. But he's sitting over there. His wife happened to be sitting right in front of me. And so Smitty raises his hand. Yes, Smitty, what? He said, your fly's open. And it was. And, I'm standing there. What do you do? You're standing
He said this
up.
In front of everybody.
I'm standing right there. We're not talking about a large hall or behind a podium or anything. I'm just standing up. So I just zipped my pants and kept on going.
Must have gotten a good response.
Oh, yeah. But you can't turn around. You can't hide. It's just, you're right there. I can recall that. I think that's in terms of the speeches that I had and speeches to deliver.
Any other moments like that you can?
No, that one is the one that comes in my mind. I kind of laugh about it. It is interesting how those things move along.
Then we go on to the 1983 legislative session. The 62nd Assembly that ran from January 10th to July 16th, 1983. Were there any significant changes in the legislature in terms of people in either the House or the Senate that... Grattan Cairns became the Speaker.
Yeah, and Fadley, the President, isn't that right?
And... Yes, Ed Fadley was president. The minority leader was Tony Meeker of Amity.
Yeah.
And Barbara Roberts was the majority leader. Larry Campbell was the Republican leader.
Yeah. I would meet with the leadership, as we'd indicated before, knowing both Grattan Cairns and Ed Fadley. And I set up my first meeting. And I told them then, because I knew them very well, that I said, you're not going to believe me, but I won't blindside you. We've got a job to do. We have to work together. And I will not, I'm not out to get you. I'm not out to show you a bad time. I won't blindside you. And I'm telling you this. I know you won't believe it, but I'm telling you this. So, you know, we have our conversations. What I'm telling you is what the way it is. Well, they were so partisan, I don't think they ever fully believed it. You know, this guy's trying to get us, or I didn't want to get any of that into the way of our discussion. We don't like it, or it doesn't match our philosophy. Yeah, I can understand disagreements, but based upon this guy's trying to give it to me, I mean, I didn't want to introduce something extraneous to the subject matter itself. So, that was my first opening shot with those two guys. And I continued to meet. We worked, you know, together pretty well. A real funny story, but I think it does relate to the special session after this session. And I called and I told them that I wanted to do something about property tax relief, and if you don't, I'm going to call you back in the special session. And they didn't, and I did. I presume you have that somewhere, and I'll cover that when the time comes. Funny story. But we worked together pretty well, everything considered.
Yeah.
What about the, in particular, the Democratic leaders, Barbara Roberts and Grattan Cairns? And
well, I didn't meet with Barbara. I met with the Speaker and the President, mm-hmm. and then the Republican leader of both the House and the Senate.
Sure.
And we would meet separately, of course, not collectively. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What was your State of the State address and legislative program like for that term?
Well, I should go back and get it. I don't recall exactly.
Well, you talked about increase in state support of all Oregon colleges and universities, but
yes.
A minimal increase for community colleges, except special training, for instance, high-tech jobs. And you said... Oregon found itself in the appalling position last year of being dead last in all 50 states in public support for its institutions of higher learning.
This was really the beginning of what I wanted to do initially. I mentioned that, what I call personal goals, one of which is to move higher education up, as you recall. We talked about mm-hmm. that. We did quite well in 1983 and completed it in 1985. About this time, Bud Davis came aboard as chancellor. Mm-hmm. That was very exciting for him and for me. He really was a superb chancellor for higher education. And I resented strongly the fact that Michael Goldschmidt got rid of him. Bartlett's a very good guy. I have nothing against him. It's just that innovative, willing to try, this kind of energizing mm-hmm. that I liked.
Mm-hmm.
The one that really represented it the most was Bud Davis. So we cranked it up. And we got something going in there. Economic development still was important to me. I'm sure if I went to the speech, as a matter of fact, I know that property tax relief was a major part. This is your last chance kind of thing.
You also talked about a $20 million $20 million for a new prison. And there was a debate as to where it should be, Damish, elsewhere, not Salem, and it was part of a 7-point plan that you had.
The interesting part was our Constitution required that it be in Salem.
Really, why?
Well, that's the way it was in the Constitution, but there was a constitutional change which allowed a prison to be built outside of Salem. That's the one that finally developed at Pendleton.
I see. Could you tell me a little bit more about your 7-point plan?
Well, I don't recall what it was. I'll have to go get my...
I have some of the main points right here.
Okay, go ahead.
One was capital punishment. You wanted to reinstate capital punishment.
Yes.
Wasn't that part of it? And your reasoning for that was?
Well, we talked about it earlier.
And abolishing the insanity plea. I think we mentioned that, too. And creating a state commission against violent crime.
That was the Dave Frohmeyer thing. He worked on it quite strongly
mm-hmm.
and comprehensively, did a good job on it.
And doubling funding for the Oregon State Police Criminal Investigation Unit?
Yeah. It's all part of mm-hmm. the crime package,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
And then you talked a little bit about the budget. And the 1% net tax net receipts tax that would raise $613 million.
Yeah. I'm laughing because I picked the wrong term. AOI didn't like it.
Net receipts tax.
Net receipts. Mm-hmm. What it basically was this whole idea was to get rid of all exemptions and deductions. Mm-hmm. And that there would be effectively what we call a minimum tax. Nobody would pay less than 1%, so nobody could escape paying taxes. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there was a graduated scale on top of that. But the minimum would be 1%. I believe in it. I believe in it very strongly. It goes back to actually, I think it was either 59 or 61. Mark Hatfield had talked about that. And the whole idea was that you don't have to argue about, you know, whether or not you spent so much for a charity or whether or not you gave, you know, something to the church or whoever you gave it to, or whether this was a tax-free municipal bond or not, or all the rest of it. That's all washed out, none of that. And simplify the whole thing. Well, it's one of those, it's a very good idea. But what I'm laughing at is I call it net receipts. Now, I've watched it crop up, even from AOI, but they call it flat tax. So I just, you know, if I had to do that over again, I'd have picked a different name for it. Flat tax they would have gone for, but net receipts they didn't like. It was almost doomed to begin with, but it's something I believed in.
Did you previously have a pledge during the campaign not to increase taxes?
Well, this wasn't about increasing. It was reforming taxes.
Reforming taxes.
That's what the whole thing was all about. Although we were going to raise some money, I don't recall saying I was never going to raise taxes. I don't recall that.
But the basic idea was that the net tax or flat tax would be levied against gross income.
Correct. Basically, that's right.
But then it was called a nets receipt tax. Do you think that was confusing in terms of?
It's confusing.
Yeah.
It's you know, as I say, flat tax, everybody could understand. But I didn't use that word.
How did you come up with that?
This goes way back, as I told you. This was something that was evolved, and I even debated on the floor of the House of Representatives in 59 or 61. Out of Hatfield's administration. I like the idea. And as I told you, I was on a tax committee all those years, and I said, this is, you know, and crazy to start arguing about what the deductions and exemptions were. Just eliminate all that stuff.
The first reaction in the press was actually very positive. It said it was a bold new step. It would have been the first in the country. And
yes, they're right. Yeah. if it could have politically flowed, that was a good idea.
But then many people called for a sales tax instead, is that right?
Sales tax just was always been hovering, always, all during the years. I remember way back when I don't know when it was, 73 or so, must have been. Anyway, Bob Straub said I voted for a sales tax, and we talked about that.
Yeah.
I voted to have it voted on by the people, but my motive, and I said I'm going to go out and campaign against it, was just to put that question to bed. But it just never quite goes to bed. It just keeps staying there.
And it's still here today.
It's still hovering, yes.
Yeah. A lot of people then, as now, were hoping that a sales tax would reduce property taxes and income tax loads on the state, which were pretty high.
That was the whole idea. Mm-hmm. And every time it's come up, it was designed for that purpose. That is to reduce property taxes and dedicated for that purpose. And in that speech, you know, I'm saying that, you know, we don't have another shot at this thing. We've got to get this job done. And that's when I told the leadership that if you don't do it, I'm going to call you back in special session.
Editorials commented that that there should be an enriching state basic school support to reduce the school burden on property tax rolls. Would the tax have achieved that then? That would just bring money more into the general pool, and then it could be appropriated to the schools. Is that right?
Yeah, it depends on what the rates you come up with. Mm-hmm. It was a general philosophy of taxation. But the whole idea basically was, well, to reform taxes, yes. But I constantly, and it's in all my, I say when I keep looking through my speeches, how many times this whole idea of property tax relief comes up in my speeches.
When you turned to the legislature, though, you had no support for that, did you?
No.
Although I see one here, was Wally Priestley. How does that figure? I mean, you seem to be at opposite ends of the spectrum from Wally Priestley.
Well, who knows where Wally's going to come from? Now that you bring up his name, it was interesting. During that ceremony, my inauguration, I was using the, I think I may have mentioned this to you, using the National Guard. Mm-hmm. And he was aware of that, came to me very nicely. He wasn't storming in. He just didn't think he was appropriate. And I said to him, you know, we had a good chat. And I said, Wally, this is my inauguration. Now, when you get inaugurated, you can do anything you want. This is mine. And but, you know, he was against military and all that sort of thing.
Well, also, as a part of that proposal was a plan to lower state personal income tax and have a tax credit replacing personal exemption. This is part of your getting rid of all the exemptions.
Right.
And a partial reconnect to the federal base.
Yeah.
And a 3% cigarette tax.
Yeah. The reconnect part, ours was never, well, let me back off a little. Earlier we were doing a reform, and it actually passed, and what it was said that we won't have our Oregonians go through this exercise twice. We won't have two sets of deduction exemptions and so forth. We will take the federal taxable income mm-hmm. and apply Oregon rates to it. Now that's in its purest form. However, there was always the question of turning over our constitutional authority to somebody else, in this case the federal government. That was a constitutional question. The second was that we didn't necessarily agree with all that was in the federal system of taxation. And so even when we did it, and we did, we had some variations of it. Mm-hmm. Now, oftentimes it would be to our advantage, that is in terms of tax collecting, mm-hmm. to connect to something at the federal level, and that would give us a greater return on the Oregon return. So some of the reconnect related to a greater return on the Oregon side. However, and this was always misconstrued by people, that the effect of all of that wasn't always as severe as it would appear. Let me say that, our rate is 10%, and I think at that time, although I don't think the rates have started to come down, at the federal level it was as high as 50%. So let's use those two figures for the sake of my example. The higher the Oregon tax, let's say we increased Oregon taxes, and we increased them at 10%, so that taxpayer is paying a lot more money to the state of Oregon. Mm-hmm. However, that same taxpayer can use the Oregon tax as the deduction of the federal.
Right.
And now that's at a 50% rate. So the increase is only half as much because they can deduct it from the federal.
But that was gotten rid of then, wasn't
it? I'm trying to explain how uh-huh. some of these things work.
I see.
And so there was, you know, there's an advantage for Oregon to pull it in and mm-hmm. and have a higher Oregon tax, but it was ameliorated by the fact that they could deduct it from the federal return. And so the actual effect on the taxpayer was not nearly as severe mm-hmm. as it would appear. Mm-hmm.
There was another proposal.
Too complicated, but those are the kind of nuances. You know, when I heard Packwood talk about, when was it, in 86 or something, the tax reform.
Right.
And I said, I know what tax reform is. I understand tax reform. Tax reform means that somebody's going to pay more money.
Well, that's what I was wondering when you were talking about not raising taxes, but instead having tax reform.
But you see, I understood what the effect was.
Yeah.
That's why I say 1985, the only time I ever supported the sales tax, I had a good sense of how it was going to affect the taxpayer. Mm-hmm. But if the taxpayer just looked at it in terms of that isolated from everything else,
yeah,
it didn't look good.
No.
But I didn't have that view. I had that view in connection with the federal. And I, as I told you, I'm the only guy that ever read the annual report of the Department of Revenue. And I'd look at, you know, where the, obviously we don't have names, but you know, the incomes and what kind of deductions and who was taking them. And I always objected to, for example, the they call standard deduction. I really object to that because that's presuming that somebody gave so much to charity, so much to the church, so much to, mm-hmm. you know, and that's making these presumptions, and that they had so much of mortgage payments, and that's all that standard deduction. Mm-hmm. And most often they didn't have any of it, but they were going to get a deduction for it. I didn't like that. I didn't like, as I explained earlier, about the $600 mm-hmm. exemption, which crept up to a higher amount, because we had 4% to 10%, so $600 was worth $24 to the 4% person, and was worth $60 to the upper income, 10% of that amount.
To make changes like that, can the legislature actually pass those changes? Or
yeah, those kinds of things. They, as a matter of fact, they did.
Uh-huh.
They did pass a standard credit, you mentioned it here, I think it was $85, which really helped the lower income, mm-hmm. you know, if they're paying, that was worth 40, now it's worth 85. And at the top rate was 100, it's now worth, 80, they lost 15 bucks in the process. But that's standardizing that. That means that my wife, my children are worth the same as yours. Mm-hmm. They're all worth the same. Not, it isn't going to vary according to the rate. Mm-hmm. The legislature did make those changes.
They don't have to be referred to the people?
No. Actually, they don't have to refer any tax to the people. Mm. They can pass any tax. The reason it's referred is, and I think it's legitimate, you know, why let the people, why have people go through the process of referring it themselves? They have to go out and get signatures and all the rest of it. They're going to do it. So why go through all of that hassle? Just refer it. So that's why it's referred. They can pass any tax bill they want. They can pass a sales tax. They can pass anything. But they know darn well that somebody's going to go out there and refer it. So. Mm-hmm. When the legislature refers it, they know exactly what it's going to. They can actually have a special election, which we did on the sales tax in 85. Because the tax, any constitutional change, and these things are always in the Constitution, has to become at the general election, which was it'd be every 2 years, which would be in November. Except the legislature can pick another date. The people can't pick another date. In other words, if you want to refer something, you can't pick another date for referring things, but the legislature can.
Mm-hmm. Well, you also made a comment at the time which was has a lot of relevance today, which was Tia observed that a sales tax if a sales tax passes without a freeze on property tax, then we will get a 1.5% limitation on the quality of life in Oregon will suffer markedly. Well, we never got the sales tax, but we did get the 1.5 limitation.
We surely did, yeah.
And a lot of people feel that we are suffering now as a result.
That's exactly right.
Your proposal to limit the growth of property taxes to 5% of assessed value would have, according to some people, a wildly uneven effect on school districts. That was from the Oregon Educational Coordinating Commission. Was that a part of your original proposal in that session? To
well, that was debated at some length because I think ballot measure 5, districts, if they had a base, if they had a tax base, could raise their budget, let's say 5.9%. Mm-hmm. And they can do that without a vote. But if they exceed 6%, go to 6.1%, then there has to be a vote. And that's how we were voting. Budgets were increasing at more than 5%. That's for those, I don't want to get too technical. Some districts didn't have a tax base at all. Some districts had a tax base so low it didn't mean anything,
right.
Like Beaverton. It was meaningless tax base. So they had to go to a vote every time. Every time, because they were exceeding, say they were, their budget was 30 million, but their base was 10. Obviously, they, you know, 6% doesn't catch up to 30 million. So they have to have a vote every time. But then there were some districts like Portland School District, they had a tax base. Okay, now taking that one. If they exceeded 6%, then they had to go to a vote. If they stayed under 6%, they didn't. Mm-hmm. Now, so we were debating, you know, what to allow in terms of increase. I thought 6% was a little high. A lot of people thought it was high. I wanted to go lower than that. But when we went to 5% as a compromise, that's how it ended.
I see. You also proposed a creation of an International Forest Products Commodity Commission and a marketing and developing division within the Department of Forestry.
Yeah. I remember we talked about that before. I never could get the industry to agree to that.
Right. And there was an interesting comment here, and we haven't talked about this before. Governor Attia is asking the legislature to authorize the sale of trees, minerals, land, and power resources from Oregon State Park System to raise money for park management acquisition. The State Parks Superintendent Dave Talbot said the division has increasingly been forced to sell parcels of state park land to raise money for park acquisition and maintenance.
We had gone through a period of time where we actually closed some parks because we couldn't maintain them.
Hmm.
Couldn't get the budget to do it. We certainly couldn't acquire any new ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Oregon really does have probably one of the finest park systems in the United States. But we just, you know, it was just sitting there without, in some cases, without any maintenance at all. So we needed some boost for the parks.
Also, an Oregon Conservation Corps modeled after a seven-year-old California program was endorsed by you, and the Corps would be funded by a tax on soft drinks at a wholesale level, the equivalent of about 1 cent per container.
Yeah, that those things are all doomed to start with.
Did you really realize that it was going to be doomed to start
well, you
with?
You know where you're going to have a real battle, whether it's, remember I talked to you earlier, whether it's worth a battle, and
yeah.
You pick things that you think are worth it, and you know it's going to be tough.
Even though you think that you might lose, you'll still the battle is
yeah,
still worth it.
If you think it's right, just go for it.
Uh-huh.
And if you think strongly enough about it, to spend the time at it.
I imagine that retail stores really fought that.
Oh yes, and distributors and everybody else.
Uh-huh.
I just saw a truck coming to work this morning. It was a beer truck. I said, "This truck will pay $123,000. No, your beer is going to cost you $123,000 more. This truck, anyway, it relates to the taxes that are being debated down in Salem."
Oh. What is the current debate on that now?
I don't know where it is. I haven't heard anything about it.
Uh-huh. You also requested a 21% increase in your office budget. You had asked for about $3 million from the State General Fund to run the office and pay the 29 people employed there, but the legislative committee cut the increase back to 15%. And you said that as your position as governor had been demeaned and pledged a tougher stance in dealing with the legislature. Did that set the tone for the session? That
this
confrontation?
What really got me quite angry is that all the years that I've been there in the legislature, the governor would make a request for their budgets and, you know, generally the legislature would approve it. I think that's the governor. If we don't like it, we'll take shots at him. And where they would take my budget in detail and really work it over, I tried to find out what the legislature's budget was. Now, that is not easy to do. And I said, okay, if you're going to be that way about it, I mean, you guys put your, for your budget, I don't fool around with your budget. If that's what you say you want, that's what you say you want.
Weren't you working?